Episode 1615, My Strength is My Story with Lauren McAfee, Not What You Think.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at
a stop sign, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have with us a welcome back for Lauren McAfee. I am so excited and delighted to have her here. She has a brand new book out, and oh my goodness, our conversation is absolutely incredible. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Lauren's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com, where you can learn more and to sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy, Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, Lauren and I had a fabulous time. It was great to catch up. And did you know she has a brand new book out? Yes, her and her husband wrote an incredible book. It's called Not What You Think. And it was really good to stir my heart for why the Bible might be nothing we expected, yet everything we need. Have you dug into the Bible? Maybe you're one who's questioned it. It is a great conversation, one that I think you will enjoy. And also, we got a little Harry Potter in there. We talk about Shakespeare. Be ready to be challenged to find ultimate hope and courage. So without further ado, let's welcome in Lauren McAfee, Not What You Think. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited. We have a welcome back to Lauren McAfee. Oh my gosh, can you believe it? She is here. She and her husband have written a brand new book, Not What You Think, and they've been married for 10 years. Michael calls Lauren his Sunday school sweetheart. Isn't that precious? You can say Michael is obsessed with all things Bible. He was one of the first employees at Museum of the Bible. Michael serves as a teaching pastor and speaker around the country. Both he and Lauren are currently pursuing their PhD in ethics and public policy at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Now, Lauren is a communicator, connector, and if you remember, most importantly, a coffee enthusiast with a heart to engage others in the Bible. You may recall Lauren's visit with us a little over a year ago with her mom, Jackie Green, who is the wife of Steve Green, the president of Hobby Lobby and founder of Museum of the Bible. They shared with us their book, Only One Life. So if you haven't read that book, you got to go read that book. It is an incredible book. I still have it and refer back to it. Well, today, Michael and Lauren, a dynamic duo, have banded together to share their passion about the transformational power of the Bible in their brand new book, Not What You Think, Why the Bible Might Be Nothing We Expected, Yet Everything We Need. And it all started with the question, do millennials need the Bible? Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you, Lauren?
Hi, I'm good. It's so fun to be back with you.
Oh, I am so excited. Well, you have taken an early flight, and so, you know, you're kind of getting grounded, and so hopefully your eyes are a little more wide open and ready. I cannot believe you have another baby book here in your hands. How exciting is that?
It's been so fun. It's been really fun to get to work on this one with my husband. My last book was I co-authored, as you mentioned, with my mom, which was a really fun experience writing with her and getting to work through just all of the process of creating something and launching something with your mother. And so it's been really fun to get to do this book and co-author this one with my husband. And so we had a lot of fun getting to work on this and write this, spending lots of time just thinking through and having lots of conversations around this topic of our generation and our generation's engagement with the Bible. And so we are really excited to get to share this with everyone and just kind of get to launch this book and get the message out and share a bit about kind of how we should think about millennials and what our generation is like so we can better understand how our generation is or rather isn't engaging with the Bible today.
And that's a really important point, Lauren, the engagement part of the Bible. And in your book, you write about three different types of readers and how you look at those who are, you know, looking at the Bible as a whole. What do you call those? How do you term them and define them for us?
Yeah, so we have three groups that we kind of talk about within the book, and those are among our generation. Specifically, we're talking about the Bible opened, and so those of us that are maybe open to the Bible and kind of see it as something that's just out there, that's kind of the middle group. And then you have on either side Bible engaged and then Bible closed. And so with Bible engaged, that's pretty self-explanatory. Those that are really engaged in the Bible see the Bible as significant for their life. It shapes their life. They're engaging in this text. And Bible closed being those that are not really interested in the Bible. They not only don't think about it, but they're definitely not interested, wouldn't want to, even if someone invited them to, so pretty closed off to it. And so we're hoping to, we wrote this book, we ourselves are Bible engaged, and so we've had our own personal experiences, and we talk about our experiences with the Bible and what that's meant for us in our lives, but we're hoping to not only encourage others that are like us and Bible engaged and kind of wrestle through some of the questions we have along this journey with engaging in the Bible, but also to invite those who are Bible neutral to consider this book again. And so one of the things that I kind of always say to summarize this book is that, you know, if we're the open-minded generation that we say we are, why not be open-minded towards engaging in this book? Because most millennials and Gen Zers haven't read the Bible. Millennials are the least Bible engaged generation in American history that's ever been surveyed on this. And Gen Z, there hasn't been a whole lot of data on them yet. There are starting to be reports now because they're getting to be kind of old enough to survey. And they're showing signs of even less Bible engagement. And so we're a generation that hasn't grown up knowing much about the Bible in terms of deep engagement and kind of understanding the overarching narrative, what it teaches, what it's about. And so we're saying, how about you read the Bible for yourself instead of taking the talking points kind of from media or from your friends? And so that's what we hope, is to get those who are kind of maybe curious, interested, even those who have maybe had bad experiences and walked away from the Bible, and ask them to check out this book for yourself. Read it. Bring your questions. Don't be afraid to bring your hard questions, and not be afraid to kind of wrestle with that and engage in the Bible.
Well, you all grew up, both you and Michael grew up in Christian homes. How has that influenced your pursuit of engaging others in the Bible?
Yeah, so I grew up in a home where my parents read the Bible regularly, and they read the Bible to me and my siblings, and we were in church often. And so Michael had a similar experience, grew up in church, his parents read the Bible at home. And so we talk about that in the book, and we just want to say, like, look up front, like, we recognize, like, we're from this group that's kind of had maybe this idealistic, of course you should believe in the Bible, it's like all you've ever known. But we talk about the journey that we've had, because though we each grew up with families that were very engaged in the Bible, we each had to come to terms with the Bible, what we thought about the Bible for ourselves. And so we each had different journeys of what that looked like, and questioning things, doubting things, and having others question and kind of push back on what our beliefs were, and us having to wrestle through, okay, like, why do I believe what I do believe about the Bible? And so we talk about that in the book just to kind of say, look, like, we get it. We seem like, why would you want to listen to us? You're just kind of have always been following the Bible. But we want to be honest about our own wrestling with that, and hopefully encourage others that it's okay to have the questions, to really not have the answers at times, and wrestle with that of, okay, what does this look like to find, you know, why do I believe this book? What does this book actually teach? How do I explain it to someone? And it takes knowing the book, engaging in the book, to come to the answers for that. So we recognize our own position in this as our voice, and want to just, you know, be honest and upfront with that, but also say, like, hey, don't discount us right away, because we've had our own questions as well.
Well, and like you said, you are a millennial, so it's not like you're writing this and attacking a different generation. You are in the generation, so you're one of them, which I would hope that people would be open to. But as one who is not a millennial, however, I have children who are millennials. Crazy thought that I just said that out loud, I'm just saying. But for those who are not really necessarily in your generation, like myself, I really found the book that you were talking about, your book, talking about the book, the Bible. We got a lot of books here. It was very fascinating because of how you shared your personal stories. You intertwined and interweaved all of your, you know, not all of your entire life story, but a lot of things in there that really allowed me to connect. And I think that's key too, because whether or not you are engaged as a Bible scholar, so to speak, or you're one who questions all the time and say, I don't know that there is a God, but we got here somehow, so there's got to be something out there. I just love how you formulated everything and put it together.
Oh, thank you. Well, we definitely wanted, as millennials, we've had the opportunity to travel around and meet a number of other millennials who are from all different types of kind of backgrounds with the Bible. My husband and I worked for Museum of the Bible for a couple of years where we were speaking across the country and talking about kind of the Bible and specifically sharing about the Museum of the Bible's vision. And the Museum of the Bible's vision is to invite all people to engage in the Bible. So this was kind of part of our work, was just sharing this mission of, hey, like, we want to invite people to engage in the Bible. That's what the museum's mission is, and it's opening, you know, in Washington, D.C. And in that work, we had the opportunity to meet people all over the country that were people often in our age group, millennials, as well as all generations, and just hear the perspectives. And we realized that so much of people's thoughts around the Bible was about narrative, was about their own personal experience with the Bible or people that they knew, their stories and their experiences. And so we knew the power of story and personal experience and wanted to include that in this book. And so, yeah, I love that you're sharing. You kind of got to see the stories and us sharing about our own experiences as well as the conversations we had with others, because we definitely wanted it to be conversational. We, as millennials, realize that, you know, we're not an older generation that's developed all the expertise. But as millennials, we have spent a lot of time in the conversations with other millennials. So we wanted to kind of get to represent from our generation, because a lot of top books that have been written on millennial engagement in the church or faith or similar topics are those that are of older generations kind of looking down on millennials and saying, you know, this is what they're doing or this is what they're bad at. And so we wanted to have a real humble approach and not criticize millennials. We are millennials, and just raise questions so that we can thoughtfully consider why we have positions that we have, why millennials are the way that we are, and how we can, based on that information, kind of consider what does that mean for us and the Bible.
Well, what do you think has been the influence on millennials and Generation Z when it comes to not even taking the time to pick up the Bible? Have you found any pattern in regards to that?
Yeah, so we write in our book that it's called the five I's of millennials, and we talk about how this has influenced our generations. And the first one is that millennials are immense. So we are a generation that is 78 million strong, and so we're a very large generation. And so that influences our role in the world and how we feel about our role in the world. So we feel a sense of strength in numbers, because we know we're a large generation. But on the other hand, we also realize that we are one of so many that can feel like we can get lost. And so that influences how we engage with a lot of things, one of which being our faith and Bible. One of the other I's is that we're informed. So millennials have grown up at the dawn of kind of social media and internet, and so we have always had access to information very easily. You know, most of us are checking Twitter for the news and have that kind of like immediate access to information constantly. And so that informs how we think about things and live life. That also has made us impatient. That's the third I. So millennials are very impatient because we're used to that kind of like instant, you know, we are getting everything a second after it happens. And so that affects our ability to, you know, sometimes that can affect if we're wanting to sit down and think about something like the Bible. If we don't have the patience, that can be very hard. So then the fourth one is impassioned. So our generation is very much the like, we want to change the world. Like, we think we can make a difference. We're all about the social causes, which is awesome. But that also does influence as well through that lens, how we look at what the Bible is about. And then the fifth and final I is that we're integrated. So we have all of these connections. We integrate everything in our life, things between kind of personal and public, have the lines are blurred there because of the rise of social media. And so we have all of these connections. So while we have lots of integrated relationships, we're rarely intimate in those relationships. And so it can be difficult to have honest conversations around something like a belief or the Bible, because if there's not that intimacy and trust in a relationship, then topics like that can be maybe scary to approach. And so all of those five I's, immense, informed, impatient, impassioned, integrated, all affect our generation and how we view the world, but that includes how we view the Bible. And so we share a bit about that and just kind of try and pull back the layers on with that as our generation's kind of framework, how should we be thinking about engagement with the Bible and what the Bible's about and how that applies to our lives. As well, I love that you mentioned that you enjoy the book as someone who's raising millennials, because we also want this to be a resource for those that are non-millennials to be able to kind of understand our generation and how we can have conversations and how we can engage around this topic. So yeah, I'm glad that you enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, it's really important. And sometimes the older we get, we think we're getting even wiser. And just because we're getting older and wiser doesn't mean we have all the wisdom. And I think we do need to open up that dialogue, not make it a monologue, but that dialogue between us as to, hey, you know, I may not understand the point where you're coming from. However, I want to be open to it, and vice versa. And so your book definitely does bring that to the table. You all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Not What You Think, Why the Bible Might Be Nothing We Expected, Yet Everything We Need. Well, I got to tell you, in your book, which is full of information, just totally jam-packed, but you write in here, and I quote, "The Bible is a personal story set on a universal stage." What did you mean by that?
Yeah, that I am glad you brought up this question, because the Bible, I think, has often had a lot of misconceptions about what it is. And the Bible is a personal story. It's about relationship. It's not about rules. It is about who we are and who we're intended to be and purpose. And so it is this universal story that applies to all of us, is what, you know, we find in the Bible. And I think we often get lost in the ability to figure out, kind of clearly define where our place is in all of that, and connect the dots maybe of what the Bible is saying or what stories in the Bible mean and how that applies to our daily lives and what that actually means, as far as kind of living out every day. And so Michael and I, in the book, we share kind of about some of our own experience with coming to understand the bigger picture of the Bible. And I grew up in a great church. I love the church that I grew up in. And whenever I was in Sunday school and, you know, going to Sunday morning services, I would hear Bible stories and knew, you know, about David and Goliath and kind of all of these different stories that we hear in the Bible, Samson and Delilah, Ruth and Esther, and thought that they were really cool stories, but I never had the understanding of what those all meant in terms of how they were pointing to Jesus in the New Testament, and then what Jesus' life meant for me and how that played out. And so we talk about kind of this disconnect that we, even though we were super churched, even had of not getting that full perspective, kind of the meta narrative of all of these little stories that kind of all compile around Jesus and his life and what his life means for us. And so we try to helpfully summarize some of that, so that for anyone that is approaching the Bible and feeling like they don't have a clear idea, that at least it's a starting point for saying, okay, you know, all of these stories you may have heard, this is what they're pointing to, and this is why that matters for us. And this is how that applies to our personal lives. And so the Bible all culminates around Jesus and allows us to have a right relationship with God. And so it's about that relationship and not necessarily about, you know, the Ten Commandments and rules, though that is a part of the story and, again, ties into all of that. But this is kind of the bigger picture. So we're trying to take that big picture view to help invite people into understanding kind of like, oh, like this is how this could apply to me. And so hopefully it provides a little bit of clarity there.
Well, I think it's beautiful clarity. It caught me immediately when I read that. I was like, yes, it's a personal story on a universal stage, beautifully written. In your three groups that you talk about, you also set a challenge up for them. What are those challenges for each of those groups? Because I know maybe for me, as I would consider myself an engager, I'm not a, you know, this well-known theologist when it comes to a scholar, but I feel like I'm very engaged. But however, we may have some that don't feel that way. Maybe they're in a season that they're closed off. They've been hurt. And they're like pushing back from God saying, I don't think I belong anymore. What are your challenges for those three groups?
Yeah, so exactly. We do have a challenge at the end of this book of just wanting to kind of engage these groups and those that are reading the book and saying, let's reconsider what has led us to our own thoughts about the Bible. And one of the things that we cover in the Bible are kind of the things that have often kept people either disengaging or keeping the Bible at arm's length. And those are kind of cultural messages and things that we see conflicting with our values and culture, as well as personal experiences. And so we try and highlight some specific examples, but that can apply in a lot of different ways. And so people can look at the Bible and think that it doesn't relate to a modern world because it's outdated. It, you know, seems oppressive to women. It doesn't relate to daily life. And so we tackle some of those hard questions to try and give kind of clarity, again, just clarity on those issues, because we found that those are one of the two things that often keep people from engaging in the Bible. And then also with the personal experiences, people have often had bad experiences, hurts, real difficult situations with a church or people who claim the name of a Christian. And so that has caused them to then want to disengage from the Bible. And so we try and tackle both of those in the book and humbly say, you know, those are very good reasons. Like, we recognize that we live in a world full of broken people, and that's because of sin, and that no church, no Christian is perfect. And so we do cause hurts to each other and sometimes really, really bad hurts. And so we hate that. And we apologize that has happened to many people and that has caused them to not want to have anything to do with not only church, but the Bible. But we want to say, you know, we want you to not write off a book because of the wrong use of it or the wrong use of someone that claims to believe in that book. And so still leaves the door open to opportunity for engaging in the Bible and to understand the Bible itself and the message that is there. And so we, as a challenge, want to push back, gently push back on our fellow millennials that are neutral or closed and say, hey, you know, what is it that's kept you from approaching this book, and invite them to reconsider based on just some of the thoughtful conversations and questions we have throughout the text, because we recognize that there are very real hurtful heart reasons why people have walked away from this book or want to have nothing to do with it. And so we absolutely get that and want to have all the empathy there, but also want to, you know, be as a friend walking alongside them and say, hey, but let's explore this book together. Let's see what the book teaches, even though some people that have also read this book have made really bad decisions. And so we hope that challenges our fellow millennials' engagement in this book.
Well, I think it will. I know for me, reading it challenged me to think a little bit deeper. You know, I think sometimes we as Christians can even get comfortable and complacent in our own beliefs. And we just are like, oh, okay, well, when I need God, he's going to show up, not knowing that there's a lot of other stuff that happens before he shows up and after and before and in between. There's a lot of mess that we go through in life. And so having those reminders, I think it's just really good for all of us sometimes to take that step back and to be pushed upon a little bit, you know, to really solidify what is our belief. Because if we're shaky in our belief, then what is our belief? Kind of deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I love that. It's such a good point, though, because the times that I've grown the most in my conviction and in my faith were the times when I was pushed, kind of in the sense of people were questioning what I believe. And so I think that challenge is good. And that is kind of ties into one of those I's that I mentioned, how we are very integrated, but not often intimate. And I think that whenever we don't have intimate relationships, we do lose that level of trust where we can kind of push each other and challenge each other, maybe mindset or the views that we have. And I remember when I was a freshman, or no, this was later in college, my undergraduate degree at the University of Oklahoma, I went to a lecture by a famous lecturer who had come to be known as someone who argued against the Bible. And so I got extra credit for going to this lecture for the religion class that I was taking. And I went and listened, you know, I'd been in the church basically since I was born, and went and heard this lecture, my second half of my, I think it was my junior year of undergrad. And he was giving all of these really thoughtful, scholarly arguments against the Bible, against why we couldn't, you know, saying we couldn't believe in it. And here are all the reasons why. And they were things I hadn't heard before, and I didn't have answers to. And so I knew that there had to be ways to process through those questions. And even if I couldn't find the answer, at least kind of dig into understanding better where he was coming from. So it was a challenge to me in my faith in that moment, but I wanted to dig in. And so we write about how that led us, Michael was there as well, to kind of wrestling ourselves with figuring out, okay, where do I find the answers to these questions of someone that's challenging me, like pushing back on me? And, you know, we were able to understand this lecturer's arguments and the angle that he was taking, and realizing that, you know, all of the doubts that it cast for us were able to be answered. And the benefit from that, though, was this exercise of someone that was challenging me, was pushing back on me, but it provided the opportunity for me to grow, to learn new things, to strengthen what I did believe. And that was a gift that I wouldn't have had if I wasn't able to be challenged and have people question and bring up good points that were worth considering and to allow me to wrestle through that. So we hope that for those that are disengaged and don't want to engage in the Bible, that some of our questions and challenges will just bring up that same curiosity of and challenge of in a helpful, healthy way of wanting to do the work of wrestling through why it is that we are believing what we believe, and then kind of digging into that and saying, I want to find the answers for myself. And so there's a lot of growth that we can always take in from those challenges.
And I know people are going to want to be stretched, because we all should be stretched. We've got to, you know, flex our wisdom muscle. Y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Not What You Think, Why the Bible Might Be Nothing We Expected, Yet Everything We Need. Well, Lauren, one of the chapters in your book is titled, What is the Bible's Message? And you write about one of the most common objections to the Bible and its relevance to our modern physical world. You say, and I quote, "But part of understanding and appreciating the message of the Bible is accepting the rules of the text." And I just got to say, Harry Potter is in your book.
Yes.
So
could not pass up that opportunity.
Of course not. That's why my children are going to read this book too.
Yes. Yeah, so we do bring up Harry Potter. Michael mentions that I am a big Harry Potter fan. I just love the story and the creative writing there. And Michael was not always, it still isn't, the biggest fan of Harry Potter. And so I loved, you know, watching the movies, and we've been to Harry Potter World. And Michael was kind of like, yeah, like, I just don't get it. Like, Matt, you know, this is so unrealistic. Like, these kids, they don't have, like, this isn't real life. People don't have wands with magic. And so he talks about his own experience of kind of stepping into the world of Harry Potter in terms of kind of accepting the rules of the framework for the story, which enabled him to engage with the story of Harry Potter for what it was. And so we try and frame that and say, you know, same thing with the Bible. Step into this context of the Bible, understanding the what the Bible's about, the rules of the Bible, the narrative that's happening, when this was written, to just immerse yourself in it, to be able to then bring your questions and your doubts there. Because that is where we'll most fully be able to really engage with the content, the narrative of the Bible itself, instead of just standing kind of afar and saying like, no, like this doesn't make sense. Like that's not how it works, but actually stepping into that. So it was great that a Harry Potter analogy got to work out there. I was very pleased with that one.
I was like, oh my gosh, we're getting Harry Potter and the Bible in one. I'm like, this is awesome. Now let's go to the Museum of the Bible. Let's see if they can correlate that one together. We got to find these magic wands.
Hopefully we don't offend anyone with the Harry Potter stuff. So, yeah.
Oh no, I think it was done very tastefully. But for those who, I mean, you know, you look at your generation and it speaks to your generation. And it's when you have a whole theme park, Harry Potter's world, you got to bring something in there. That's something I think that in order to have those conversations, we also have to think about real life too. And that's what stood out to me about your book is that you didn't tiptoe around the subject. You're like, hey, this is what life is really all about. This is what it looks like to me. Yeah. But come in. Yeah. I don't necessarily have all the answers, but let's look at this and take this journey together.
Exactly. And we got to make an analogy with that while talking about Harry, Ron, and Hermione, which is like the best. So I hope people enjoy that.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. Well, the Bible is clear in its claim to truth. Talk about the dichotomy between the Bible and culture and how it affects the modern reader.
Yeah, so I love the quote by C.S. Lewis. He talks about the truth claims of the Bible and says that you have to really wrestle with the claims of the Bible and either have to believe them that Jesus is Lord or that he was a liar or that he was a lunatic. But you can't just think he was a good person because Jesus himself claims to be the way, the only way, the way, the truth, and the life, and that no one comes to the Father except through him. And so Jesus himself makes very bold claims about who he is. So that doesn't leave room for people to just think like, oh, like he was a nice person. He was a kind, friendly, loving person. He was loving. But you also have to take his claims into consideration. So because of that, you really have to wrestle through, and it doesn't leave room for just thinking like, oh, it's a neat story. So in understanding what Jesus, who Jesus claimed he was, the Son of God, he was fully God and fully man, lived a perfect life, died and rose again to make a way for us to have forgiveness of our sin. He was the perfect sacrifice for us and gives us the opportunity to be reconciled to God, and have relationship with God. Those claims, you have to wrestle with that and come to what you believe about that. And so, C.S. Lewis's quote, either you accept him as Lord, that he was those things that he claimed to be, or you think that he was a liar and he was just lying about all that, or you think he was a lunatic, like a crazy person, just like didn't know what he was talking about. He was crazy. And so for Michael and I, we've obviously recognized Jesus as our Lord, and the Bible, because of its the beautiful narrative that it has and that it has been passed down for thousands of years and has stood the test of time. And so many things point to the accuracy of the Bible in terms of translation. There are more translations of pieces, manuscripts of the Bible than any other document in history, especially classics that we take and just believe in. And so there's so much evidence that's hard to push aside. And so this isn't an apologetics book, so we don't dive really deep into that. There are great apologetics books out there that talk about manuscript evidence. The Bible's kind of pointing to its own prophecies and in its text itself that prove each other. So we don't dive into that as much because there are lots of great resources for that. But we do say, you know, there are lots of things out there that do help with those questions that show, you know, there's a lot of backing with the truths that it is claiming.
Well, and I think it's important that we look at that and consider that on all angles, right? We need to kind of shore up our belief and what it is. And that also strengthens our faith, like we talked about earlier. In your book, chapter 8, should I read it all? I was like, well, duh, I've gotten this far. I should read, right? You talk about the discipline of reading, which I thought, okay, every, you know, young child needs to know that reading is very important. And I was not a reader when I was growing up, did not like it. Don't tell my children that, even though they'll listen to this and be like, Mom, you really didn't like reading? Why do you think this is so important today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was just listening to a lecture yesterday, and someone was bringing up some of the themes that we write about, actually, of the benefit of engaging the mind and engaging with content that challenges us and grows us. And so they were kind of making this, it was a professor, he said that he was talking with his a classroom that he had and saying, you know, the differences between something like The Simpsons or reading Shakespeare. And he was saying, are they like of equal value? And so he had them rank them of what was more entertaining or what was more like challenging and like of deeper importance. And so everyone said The Simpsons was easier and more entertaining, but that they recognized the importance of engaging with content like Shakespeare. And there's value in that, in reading literature, engaging with really thoughtful content. And so that was just like another reminder for me of chapter 8. So chapter 8, we do encourage the readers, hopefully, of our book that have made it to that point, that reading is good, and we need to consider what we are reading. So we kind of talk about the way to approach books. And so have humility in approaching books that you're reading, but also realize that not all content is of equal value. And one of the points that we make is that, you know, something that someone wrote on a blog may not hold the same weight of something that has stood the test of time of thousands of years, like the Bible has. And so to discern, to have discernment in the content that we're consuming, and to recognize that there are differences in types of content. We're kind of like the SpongeBob and Shakespeare. So yes, SpongeBob is maybe easy mindless, or Simpsons easy mindless things, but engaging with something like the Bible can bring a different level of depth, and also has stood through the test of time of longevity. And so we have so much that we can learn and grow through reading. And Michael and I are avid readers. We love reading. And so we wrote this chapter not out of our bias for reading, but out of encouragement for our generation, especially, who is so often on social media and the internet. And we have to discipline ourselves to say, you know, to step aside and set our phones down to make the time for engaging in books. And so reading a good book, engaging the mind in a more meaningful way, and then just scrolling. And sometimes that means engaging in the Bible, and also that means engaging in other good books of people that have written on the Bible, or just have good literature that help us use our mind and think well. And so, yes, we do encourage good reading, but we also encourage that framework of humility, not judging the book before its cover, and using discernment when approaching the Bible, and to see reading a book as getting to know a friend and really trying to walk alongside that friend and put yourself in those shoes and understand where the author's coming from, where the story's coming from. And with the Bible, this is kind of like that analogy of, you know, with the Harry Potter, of like jumping in and taking, putting yourself in that environment, in the context. Same, like look at the Bible as a friend, and you're getting to know the content, you're getting to know the context, and engage with it with an open mind, as if you were listening to a friend and wanting to understand where they were coming from. So we do highlight reading, which was kind of ironic, because like we're writing in a book, encouraging people that they should read books, and I hope they read this book, but I also hope they read other books and the Bible. So
the book,
lots of reading to go around. Yeah,
that's right, lots of reading. Well, what does your day look like when it comes to reading? Because of course, people say, "Hey, how are you?" and you're just like, "I'm so busy." Where do you fit in reading in real life?
That's a great question. You know, I just caught a 5 a.m. flight this morning to a city for a meeting I have for work. And so I travel home late tomorrow. So I probably won't get a lot of reading in these couple days. But my reading is not like, I'm not one of those people that's like 8 p.m. every night I'm reading, you know, my book or whatever. So I just read wherever I can. So if a lot of times that's on weekends, so I make a lot of progress on weekends because I work full time and am also trying to write on nights. And so I also, though, have found that I love audiobooks. So if some books are on audio, then I can listen to them in the car and engage with engage with a book while driving to and from work. So I've actually found that my commutes have become some of my reading time, which isn't always the same to be listening to it as reading it. But still, I love with the Bible listening to the audiobook on the YouVersion app. So I'll often, if I'm in the car driving home somewhere at night, I always do my Bible reading at night. And so if I'm driving home, then I can listen to, you know, whatever chapters of the Bible I'm going to be reading through for that day, set that, hit play, and it'll play. And I love that. So it's just, it brings out different ways of engaging with the Bible. There is sitting and reading it quickly. There are times when I sit and really just dive into it and I'm more digesting it. And then there are times when I'll be listening to it. And so I'll get different things through each of these different ways of engaging, specifically in the Bible, that I really enjoy. So if you don't have the YouVersion app, I recommend people get the YouVersion app because it has, it's Bible for your phone. And if people aren't familiar with it, you can listen to it. There are also videos on there that can give you context if you're looking for context about chapters, as well as the Gospels each have kind of a video that you can watch along with the narration if you want to not only listen to it, but watch the stories play out. So lots of cool things available on the YouVersion app that make it easy to read anywhere, even if I'm traveling. So I'll be reading from my YouVersion app tonight while I'm on the road.
That's awesome. Well, I know you all are going to want to be reading some more because you're going to add a new book to your library, Not What You Think, Why the Bible Might Be Nothing We Expected, Yet Everything We Need. Well, I mentioned earlier, Lauren, before when we were getting started, and you use a lot of your personal stories. One of your chapters is titled, The Bible is the Story of Us. And I was like, okay, I'm in. I got to read this one, you know. So, and I found in this book, you share about how you desire to start a family. And you talk about that, setting, you know, Michael down, taking him out to lunch. And I won't go into the details. But you also talk about the trials and the struggles with it. And you question in that chapter, how can we reconcile the suffering we experience? And then you go on to say, the ultimate hope the Bible offers to Michael and me in our barrenness and to the world in its suffering is that God is better than our circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Powerful.
Yeah, that was probably one of my favorite sections to write, because I think for a few reasons. One, it was very personal, and so I've found that it's helpful for me to process through my grief and suffering whenever I can write about it, and kind of it helps me think through how I'm feeling about things and process it. Because it can be easy for me to just kind of push things aside and be like, oh, it's fine, like just move on and not really deal with things. And so writing that was helpful in that way, but also because I feel like it summarized my, in some ways, my hope for this book is that people will know the hope that we have. That's the point of everything. So Michael and I have been pursuing starting a family for 7 years, and both through adoption and also biologically, and we've had infertility and failed attempts for adoption. So none of those paths have worked for us to wanting to have a family. And so that has brought about, sadness and grief in that of not knowing if that dream will ever be fulfilled. But Michael and I are so grateful for what we know from Scripture and that firm foundation to hold to in the midst of suffering when we don't understand, it doesn't make sense, we don't know why. But we know that we have a God that loves us. And even if we don't understand the circumstances, we know that He is for us, and He sent Jesus for us because He loves us, and has given us ultimate hope, and that is to be united with God in heaven someday, whenever we leave this world. And that is when all tears and all sorrows will be wiped away. And so we have that hope because of who Christ is and what He's done for us. And I want others to have the same kind of peace. There is like actually this peace that doesn't make sense and passes all understanding, as you know we hear about in Scripture, that comes with this faith and relationship with God that is the most beautiful thing. And so I wouldn't trade that for anything. And we want to share our story just to show the beauty that is that hope and peace that comes from God, and hopes that other people will want to have that as well. So that really is my hope with this book, is that people will get to know the same hope that I have because of Jesus Christ and my relationship with Him.
I love your heart, Lauren. I mean, I'm just telling you, you are one special gal. And I just love, I mean, the first book, we've got this book. Is there a third birth happening in a new book?
Someday, maybe. Right now, I am still in a PhD program. So right now, I'm focusing my writing efforts on papers and dissertations. So,
well, I'll be praying for that, because that is whole nother baby.
Yeah, it is a lot. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, how can we encourage, as we come to a close, how can we encourage others to be willing to step into reading the Bible?
Yeah, so I think that as we share our own experiences and share what the Bible has meant to us, those really personal stories of how the Bible has gotten us through things or spoken to us or been an encouragement and a light to us, that's something that's really easy and tangible to share with others, even if they're not Bible engaged and they're some, disengaged or closed. They can't argue with those experiences that you've had. And so to just get to share the beauty of how that's practically played out in your life can be a way to open the door to conversations about, what it would look like for them to engage in the Bible and helping to walk them, walking them through where to start engaging the Bible and maybe pointing them to this book to help answer some of their questions. That would be my encouragement.
Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you, Lauren. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me. My website is laurenamcafee.com, and my Twitter and Instagram is @LaurenAMcAfee.
Well, we will definitely have all that information in the show notes, along with how to get a copy of your own book, Not What You Think, Why the Bible Might Be Nothing We Expected, Yet Everything We Need. Well, before I let you go, I have one last question for you. The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story in writing this book gifted you?
Hmm. Wow. I think that in writing this book, it's given me, I think, the maybe courage to have more conversations with others about engaging in the Bible. And that may sound weird because it's been so much of like my part of my work in my career at times. But I think taking the time to really wrestle through, you know, what is the kind of main opposition that millennials have towards the Bible, and better understanding other millennials has really helped me to give me the courage to have kind of the strength to engage in those conversations. And so, yeah, I would say that's been really cool.
Well, you're a beautiful gem, and I cannot wait to see your dissertation. Maybe I'll read it online somewhere. It might be, you know, for some people, it might be really interesting to dive into. I've got a lot of friends who love dissertations, believe it or not. So,
oh, wow.
But I cannot wait, though, to see what and how God uses you, both you and Michael, as you continue on your journey.
Oh, thank you. Well, this has been so much fun. It's always great to catch up with you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.